Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Admiral Phillips, and in this episode, we'll be covering a vast majority of topics from some of the experiences by some of the fandom watching the Abrams Kelvin universe for the first time, and getting to some of the commentary on what people wish that this series had turned into initially, as well as a couple of Twitter conversations I had on Star Trek Discovery as a whole, and what I actually think about it despite the misgivings that it seems I'm giving this series, and I'll explain that further. Also, I'll be talking about the latest episode, Lethe, which was airing last night. So, without further ado, I'm going to get into the initial topic of the person that watched Star Trek Beyond for the first time. And this individual said he was about to watch Star Trek Beyond, not a huge fan of the J.J. Trekverse. The first movie was decent, but didn't feel like Trek to me, aside from character names, and Into Darkness was just a whole lot of nope. Okay, Beyond, what's it going to be? And then he gives his updated review after. He says, okay, Star Trek Beyond, rather than making another post, I'd rather say this than the first two for sure. I'd rather see that this one. He says, let's say Into Darkness never happened either. Enjoyable, but not entirely into this new universe. Some parts were cringeworthy, but overall not bad. I believe the friendships portrayed on screen much more than those prequels that never happened. Carl Urban is an amazing Dr. McCoy. And I kind of felt a lot of the same, especially with how bad Into Darkness was. There was so much wrong with it. It kind of reminds me, it makes Discovery's randomness seem more coherent than what we got in that film. Beyond was actually really good, despite the Beastie Boys music bit. One of the funniest comments, though, was the first one was average at best and had some of the stupidest coincidences imaginable. Into Darkness was total crap and Beyond is great. That's just kind of the general consensus of what I've seen so far on some of it. However, getting to the Twitter conversation I was having, I was actually kind of torn, because I've been having this conversation for the past couple of days anyway, and somebody, and this is where I shut down in conversation, is where people feel the need to use expletives to get their point across. And to me, that's not really the best method of trying to portray your difference of opinion. And that's really all it's kind of boiled down to, is there's a lot of difference of opinion in this Star Trek Discovery to the original timeline. I don't, despite what the producers say and what these particular individuals have venomously yelled at anyone who disagrees with the mentality of the show, I am thankful for another Star Trek series. I'm not thankful that it's on an app over television, where it's more readily accessible to the masses. I see this as a giant cash grab, which it's not really foreign to CBS or Paramount before this. I mean, they launched UPN for the sole purpose of having their own, and they used the new Star Trek series of, I believe, Voyager to launch it. And then they tried it in the 80s as well with the original series in The Next Generation. So it's not a foreign concept for them to do this. But what I've disliked is the fact that these individuals, despite what you may think, resort to these venomous comments. And I was having this conversation and I ended up having to block the individual, because it was kind of a nice conversation going between five of us on Twitter, and I was enjoying the going back and forth until this person started swearing. And it says, the history, i.e. the canon of the series, has not changed in the least. It kind of has. They've introduced these new Klingons, and none of them resemble anything in Enterprise, the original series, or The Next Generation onward. So we've got these blue-looking, double-nostriled, weird-looking Klingons, and people are trying to act like I'm beating on them because they have no hair. The hair thing, that's based on the individual. Like, you get General Chang, who had more or less a ponytail, you know, bald head type thing, and you had other Klingons with bald heads or limited hair. So, like, that's not what I'm debating. I'm debating the entire aesthetic. The fact that they, the way they talk, it sounds like they've got, pardon my French, but some genital region in their mouth while they're talking, or they're chewing on marbles. Like, it's not, I don't know, it's not as believable, and I feel like the acting in the Klingons alone are paled in comparison to any other Star Trek series, and that's even putting TOS above it, and TOS has kind of garbage Klingons. Like, they're okay, but they're not like our TNG DS9 Klingons that we had. So I don't see this fitting in canon. Plus, you have site-to-site transporting, you have holograms, you have various other things, and I'll get into another technology, a couple of them that show up in this latest episode, and why I don't believe that they fit. But anyways, this person says, nothing represented thus far changes anything from any other series. Actually, you know, again, the Klingons, the tech, the ships, the fact that we haven't seen a single Constitution-class starship yet, despite all these ones that look like everything from the Dominion War that we got. Like, almost every ship we've seen are basically, they look like they came from the Dominion War time period. And they said, and for the record, Discovery looks 1,000 times better than TOS ever did. I'm not even debating. That wasn't even what I was debating with this person. We were debating the Klingons alone. And how it fits in the canon. This person decided that I was talking about the aesthetics, and it had nothing to do with that. I've gotten over that because I realized that as technology progresses, television, you know, they're able to do these feats they weren't previously able. So you have the ability to show things or do things better than what you could have in the original series, The Next Generation, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, so on and so forth. But I don't like that they're using the Kelvin universe aesthetics for all of the prime timeline material. It should have some semblance that it fits in this universe, and everything is entirely too polished and too graphically pleasing. And that's, I think, detracting from the fact that they should be concentrating more on the series and the writing. And I don't feel like a lot of this stuff is warranted. And I'm seeing a lot of backlash from people in general of, you know, enough with the prequels already. We could have had, there were half a dozen other places we could have taken this. We could have done an anthology series that each season fit in a different part of the timeline with different parts of the crew, or you know, you could technically have this crew be a time traveling ship that gets lost and kind of shows up in random time periods for a small stint in something. You could have had, you know, between the early 24th century and mid 24th century, when the Enterprise B, you know, is flying around before it gets destroyed and the Enterprise C gets lost. You could have had the mid-25th century to kind of differentiate, and then they could have reinvented everything and come up with a new reason for why things are the way they are. I mean, there was other methods that they could have taken and changed this, and been given the freedom to change whatever they wanted had they gone more into the future with it. Or just simply said, we're rebooting it, we're doing a whole new timeline. it's not going to be a part of the Kelvin, then we can kind of keep going with this television universe and just kind of, you know, left it at that. But they didn't. So, anyways, I'm not debating that aesthetics, but when you can have intercom systems on your starship and you can just have the computer talk to you no matter where you're at, which the original series, Kirk always had to go to a bulkhead somewhere on one of the walls and hit a comm system so that he could talk to anybody for the comm system. So this is something that kind of bothers me. And then they said, have you seen all 24 houses yet? No, you have not. You've seen most of them. They mostly showed up in that first episode when they were meeting with T'Kuvma. And so in doing that, we got to see that almost all of them look exactly the same. And they've got these weird alien xenomorph looking back of the head things going on. And none of them, again, none of them resemble even the Kelvin universe. And I hate the Kelvin universe, like their redesigns of some of the stuff. But even the Kelvin universe Klingons looked more like Klingons, other than the fact that they had the bright blue eyes and they had the weird piercing thing on their forehead. Those Klingons even looked more Klingon than what we got in Discovery. So, I mean, if they wanted to even go that route, I would have been like, okay, I can see this could be a different sect of Klingons. But it just kind of infuriates a little bit. And then this person says, and again, a visual change. Makeup techniques are better today than in 67. Stop effing whining. Also, you haven't seen all 24 houses. Again, we've seen most of it, and I don't believe we're going to get anything different as this series progresses. So I think this person's going to be wrong anyway, but I'll never know because I blocked them. I know makeup techniques are better, but we also got better techniques in TNG and Voyager and DS9. So, again. And then they said, this particular person is very toxic on Twitter. So I read their other posts and I was like, you know, this person's just trying to get a rile and trying to be mean about it. There's no actual conversation going on. So they said none of that stuff matters. It's all visuals. And then it's 2017, not 67. Get the F over how TOS looked. It doesn't matter. It had nothing to do with TOS. I was comparing to TNG and the rest of them. It's still, even the technology we've seen doesn't line up with anything in the future we've seen. We just started getting holographic projections in TNG and Nemesis, and it wasn't as crystal clear and functional as what we got in Discovery. So that alone kind of tells me something screwy with it. And plus, the Klingons didn't get cloaking technology until the Star Trek 3. So, and then the firing when cloak didn't come until Star Trek 6. So, there's so much wrong with that, it's not even funny. But I said I would be more happy if this was a rebooted universe. And they just left it at that. And I'm treating it as a reboot at the moment, so that I can sit and comfortably enjoy the series as it is. Because if I look at it as trying to fit into canon, it just infuriates me. And I can't sit there and pay attention to that aspect of the series. I'm sitting here trying to figure how it fits. And I don't know how many other people are feeling that way. But that's kind of my thought on it. And so I'm treating it like this until I see other reasons why or how it exactly fits into our proper prime timeline. So, you know, they, again, this particular person is just very toxic. And then, even in Star Trek Online is very centered on the canon in the universe, and it's actually canon, which is interesting because it goes back and forth throughout time, and Discovery is by no means even mentioned. I mean, I know they're going to eventually add something in there, but I don't think it's going to have too big of an influx in the series. Not only that, but it says that when you're in the 23rd century and you're starting out as a captain of a ship and you're helping Captain Garrett escape along with the armada of Federation, Constitution, and kind of Dreadnought-class starships, Agent Daniel says, your sacrifice allowed Garrett to warn Starfleet about Klingon cloaking tech, but your ship was lost with all hands. So, like, they started to gain it at this point. But again, it's not... So, I mean, I kind of see how it fits a little bit with the cloaking with Star Trek Online. But, again, it's kind of a... It's kind of a touchy area. They also had... When I was going through the Twitter sphere, I've been kind of trolling the Star Trek CBS Twitter handle just to kind of see if I can get a rise out of them and get some information. Also, I would love to be a fly on the wall so I could know what is going on so that I can kind of understand where they're coming from in any of this. I feel like a lot of this is just flying off the handle and just saying, oh, trust me. So... There was this thing saying, oh, if you're not watching Star Trek, you know, which is what they posted, you know, why aren't you? Or they had like a head slap thing with Worf. So I said, if I understood how it actually fits in a TOS timeline, I'd be more apt to watch. And so we had this nice conversation going on Twitter about, you know, how we're watching Discovery, but like we watched Enterprise, a new alternative films, I enjoy them, they just don't feel like canon. But we were also talking about the different houses and hairs styles of Klingons, and I kind of said, you know, if we had a 25th century Enterprise, you know, so far away from canon, you know, they'd never have to look backwards, clean slate sounded smarter. Because I kind of said, you know, I'd rather that they reinvented in the 25th century and just kind of left it at that, but it didn't. So, you know, they have said that it will be explained on the Klingons, but it could be anything, a mutation of the augment virus, a failed attempt at a cure, you know, anything. However, I don't think it's either. I think that this was just their blatant, just, I just want to reinvent it, so I'm going to reinvent it. It's funny how we were having this conversation, though, and somebody says, I thought that we saw typical representatives of all houses in Star Wars style holographic form, not Star Trek style, when unifying, which I'm pretty sure we did, and they all looked the same. And then they said, you know, what about Enterprise set before Discovery? The films are 24th century based series. All those Klingons looked very similar in style. Just visuals, this thread started with an image of Worf, a typical both Enterprise films and 24th century Klingon. This is just comparing. So yeah, we had this nice little conversation going, and you know, in every version except the alternative universe new films, Klingons and their ships looks evolved smoothly, and Discovery equals like a massively divergent issue where, you know, at least before, they all had hair and consistently similar evolution of ship design as well. A lot of people have been wondering, you know, yes, drastic changes should be explained. They've done it. Why is that so hard? Why is consistency so hard? And then there's other people that are saying, you know, that Klingon has changed so many times, I don't get the butt hurt from the vocal minority. And Again, it's such a divergent shift for the Klingons. I feel that that's one of the biggest problems. You know, I'm a huge Trekkie. I understand they're going to want to do their own thing and try things, but I don't feel like the 10 years before things should have fit. Plus, the uniforms and the insignias that they use weren't, the insignias weren't really standardized. Those were kind of Enterprise emblems. So they weren't really standardized until that era when they kind of made it the go-to design. because the flagship of the fleet. And somebody brought this to my attention on Twitter, and I said, you know, again, if I actually understood how it fit into the TOS timeline, and this other guy goes, it doesn't. We know what TOS minus 10 years looks like from the cage slash menagerie, which I didn't even think of that. That was a totally foreign concept I hadn't even thought about. They mentioned that, and I'm thinking, okay, so the uniforms look totally different than what we've got here. And the insignias, and then the weapons, and so they've kind of got a mixture of the two different kinds of weapons from the cage and from TOS for Discovery, which I'm fine with. But yeah, the ships, and which had all the little weird gadgets sticking out from them instead of all the holographic stuff, which they don't even have until like Voyager era. It's a bit difficult to swallow that this far in the past they have all this massive technology and yet none of it's used. So, yeah, I kind of was stuck with that. So I'm going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about the episode Lithe. So on this episode, episode 6 of Star Trek Discovery, we have Lithe, which starts off with a basically Captain Lorca and Ash Tyler doing a round through a holographic battle scene. Essentially, they're armed for battle. They're going into this whole recreation room, which looks like a holodeck. And I was sitting there going, okay, something's wrong. Like, I didn't realize that the holodeck was this far back. And so I was going through it, and I was like, okay, they didn't have stellar cartography and a holodeck this far back in the past. And then I later was doing research and found out that there was some recreation rooms which were only partially like a holodeck. They weren't 100% holodeck technology, but they were pretty close. And it was in the animated series, and I guess they wanted to do it in season 3 of the original series, but they had a certain part in the timeline during the animated series where the Enterprise had one of its rec rooms updated with basically a holodeck, and it's in the episode of the animated series, and they had this holodeck malfunction and whatnot. But anyways, the Gene Roddenberry had intended to have this show up anyway, but again, it was a budget issue in the past, so they didn't work it in there. So they had it in there, and then apparently the Next Generation cast or writers didn't remember the episode from the animated series when they conceived the holodeck. So it was kind of thought that the Next Generation came up with it, even though the animated series had it first. So we could theoretically say that Discovery would have it first in the sense that it's the most advanced starship. Also, it kind of lends to that they had it there, and then eventually the Enterprise gets it. And I think that the Constitution-class starships are a little bit older, and I know Enterprise gets refit about every time they get a new captain, or every 5 years. So it's been around for a while, they just haven't done heavy refits, and they did the massive refit in the motion picture, which, again, it still wasn't as updated as this, which strikes me as odd. And I'm wondering if the Spore Drive is like the precursor to Transwarp technology. Even though Spore Drive is instantaneous and the Transwarp is not. It's like you slapped a cue into your computer system. Also, some people have made this connection and think that this may be possible, that Vok, the albino Klingon that showed up and was sent off by another Klingon when Kor, or whatever his name is, that Klingon, took over all the Empire. The one person says the Watcher clan, the Deceivers, the Weaver of Lies, where they'll send him. And he says, what must I sacrifice? And then she says everything to him. And some people are making this connection that Ash Tyler is just a human form Vok, changed by the Mokai into a human. And that's how he survived and had the affinity with that other Klingon for that supposed 7 months. So I'm wondering if it's a red herring or not, if this is true. It would make interesting because that would be the part of the giving them the more human look for the original series, which would certainly be fitting. But again, it's hard to say. I know there's a lot of mystery shrouded there, with that particular character, and I guess we'll find out as the series progresses. But I do find that a bit interesting that's the internet's thought on it, which means it's probably not true. But again, it's still interesting to think about. So, getting into further parts of the episode, they have this stellar cartography bit in there, and I was like, okay, that was a Voyager thing, or even Star Trek Generations. It showed up. So I don't remember any starship having it prior to that. I could be wrong, but I don't think it did. So then we get Sarek being almost assassinated by a Klingon or a Vulcan purist who does not want Sarek to succeed in meeting with the Klingons because he sides with humans, and so he gets hurt, and because he shares his Katra with Burnham, she has to go on a mission with Tilly and Ash Tyler to rescue him. And Lorca, at the same time, is dealing with Admiral Cornwell on the Discovery, who makes a special trip to visit him and more or less threatened to take away his command because he's unstable since getting captured and sitting back in the captain's chair. And so that's a little bit interesting. She's always kind of struck me as a little bit of a doctor, and then it kind of got confirmed she was a ship's doctor and a psychiatrist, which are among the same thing on a starship. So she's more or less threatened to take away his command after she starts, you know, they've had sex on the Discovery, and she starts messing with a scar on his back, and he flips over her with a phaser and puts it right into her face and chokes her. And so she's like, you're not stable at all, and tells him that he needs help, and she's going to take his command. And so because Sarek was supposed to meet with the Klingons to garner peace, because he's known as someone who has the affinity to deal with races that don't share in logic and deal on emotion, and he's got this affinity for dealing with people with human emotion and that are part human or fully human, Admiral Cornwell goes in his place. And so thus she is theoretically captured, and that kind of leaves you there. And Sarek is on the Discovery, and you get to have some historical adding of Burnham, where the Vulcan command more or less told Sarek he could recommend one of his children to the Vulcan Science Academy or expedition, the Vulcan Science Expedition. And he was told that because he has two humans, they don't count Spock as Vulcan because he's a half-blood. And so they treat him like garbage as well. And so Sarek goes with his blood, which is Spock. And Spock basically throws it in his face by joining Starfleet and joining the Enterprise and whatnot. So it's kind of a, you get that historical part where Sarek is still you know, where he's upset with Spock because of a decision he made that Spock more or less said no, and he could have given it to Burnham. So, I don't know. It was a pretty solid episode. You got enough, a little bit of a background into the Spock-Sarek problems that happen later, of why they don't get along. You get a little bit of the humanity in Lorca. He even fully reinstates Michael Burnham as a bridge officer in this episode. And I'm not sure if he's setting up for the fact that either A, he knows he's going to die at some point. B, he knows he's going to lose his command, so he wants to ensure Burnham is still in the fleet. Or C, they're setting up for a bigger end game where Lorca is going to be killed at some point in the future, and Burnham will end up taking command of the Discovery. So I'm just wondering, or if Saru's going to take command of the Discovery. I'm wondering if they're lining up for something in that regard, because none of this crew makes it beyond this show into the original series. So I'm wondering if, you know, all of them die at some point, and so after they've completed their mission, it's kind of hard to say. So we'll kind of see what happens. But I feel like it was a pretty solid episode, and other than a couple of minor nitpicks that have been kind of plaguing me the entire time this series has been going, I feel like this episode was actually pretty pretty strong. You got a little bit of Starfleet Command, you got a little bit of Lorca pulling a Sisko. The only difference is they called him out on it and made a special visit. I kind of wonder how the Admiral made it all the way to Lorca when he's by the Nebula where Sarek's at. In that quick of a time span after the jump. But that really wasn't discussed. I mean, this series has its flaws for sure, but it's getting better. And I feel that some of it does connect with continuity. I just wish that some of it wasn't so shiny and graphically pleasing to the eye, and focused more on the story than all the little interesting gadgets and redesigning everything because they can. But overall, I think it was a pretty good episode. And so I kind of leave it at that. We're only a couple more weeks until we're on break for the year, which is a bit unfortunate. And I'm hoping I can get TFG1 Mike and Mike the Birdman Dodd on for a discussion on Star Trek Discovery once they've watched parts of it, and kind of collect our notes and our gripes and our high points, and kind of go over the series as a whole so far, and compare it to other series and things that were wrong with those as well. That about rounds it out for this episode of Future Imperfect. So I hope you keep listening. I hope you enjoy it. Leave comments for me. Leave comments on the show. Leave feedback on AlterGeek.com under Future Imperfect. You can also find it at GeekCast Radio and This Week in Geek. You can find it on Google. You can find it on Stitcher. It's not yet on iTunes, which was totally an oversight on my behalf. It will be there soon. You can also interact with me on Twitter at AlteredGeek. And so until next time, Warp Factor 8,
engage.